Okay, thanks, Lee. So, you know, I noticed some new things this year out there. They have emeritus member of 50 year plus, and I was looking for one that said old fart, and I couldn't find it. So maybe next year we can work that out. Okay, so to the survey. Today we want to report the results of the survey. Maybe some of you are part of the data set. We want to identify some future directions for the Emeritus Task Force, and then we want to get some input from you. So we surveyed former Emeritus members, we surveyed current Emeritus members, and then we picked a population of people that had been in the societies 30 or more years and sent them a survey. So let's look at former Emeritus members. We sent out 135, we got back 19, so about a 14% return. Now, it turns out that those old sour heads are gone, so we won't pay much more attention. We'll talk a little bit more about them. But then you'll notice that the return percentage on the current Emeritus members and the 30-plus persons that are still active was quite high. You know, when you do surveys, if you get 47% or 33% to send something back, you've got some decent data. Okay, so let's start with results from our former Emeritus members. It turns out this really represents 19 people. So we're not going to spend too much time here. They said that as an active member, they attended the annual meetings regularly, 50% of them, 39% irregularly. They said as emeritus members, remember now, these are people that were emeritus and then dropped their membership. They said they attended never after they became emeritus, and then irregularly about 32% of the time. So reasons for not renewing their emeritus membership. Membership fees too high. Now I want you to read that number, 68%, because I'll show you another interesting number as we get on down the line. Some of them said their focus has shifted to personal activities, which is perfectly normal. Some didn't see opportunity to contribute to tri-society activities. And some of them were just not interested anymore in annual meetings. And then some of them said they were more active now with other groups, and we don't really know too much about what those are. So those are the people that had been emeritus members that didn't continue to do so. Now, current emeritus. These are maybe represented by some of us in here. I'm one of these. And this is about their attendance at meetings. So while they were still active members, that's what's in the top box there. I think I can, well, my little pointer's not working. And so then they said they regularly, about 62% of them said when they were regular members, they attended the meetings. Now, if you go to the lower box, it's what happened after they became emeritus members. Now, these are people that are still paying their emeritus dues, and some of us are here in the room. 50%, 51, never come to the meetings. And 39% now and then, and 10% never. So we put that on a little graph over here, and I want you to look at that comparison. Emeritus members basically don't, even though they were regular attenders when they were regular members, they don't come after they become emeritus. So the contrast in those two bars is quite striking. Okay, now, why don't they come? And I think this is pretty easy to interpret.
I knew that.
Yeah, you knew that. So there's the big one right there. Now, this is totally out of the control of the Emeritus Task Force. You know, we don't have any way to pick up the travel and lodging costs. So this is one that no matter what we do, you really can't do much about it. Now, registration fees, you notice that's fairly high right there. That one has been taken care of. When you're an emeritus member, you pay roughly half of what you do as a regular member. And then there was a group there that just aren't interested anymore. Now, those were people that were that are emeritus members and why they don't come to meetings. So now, current emeritus member interest in other opportunities. You know, what? Why are they emeritus members, basically? And in red letters, none at this time, I'm a member to support the societies. In other words, They don't really care what we do here at the meetings. They don't really care what we offer them. They're going to become emeritus members to support the societies. There were 56% of the people that responded to the survey that chose that answer. And then, how many of you are interested in mentoring? Well, there were some, 9%. Networking, 7%. Serving as an expert for questions, 19%. And then other, which 9%. So the key thing here is that the people that are currently emeritus members are paying their dues, basically, to remain as contributors to the society. Or at least that's what it appears from these data. Okay, so now, you remember that number? There was a bunch of people that had been emeritus members that dropped their membership because dues were too high. So we asked the current emeritus members, what about dues? And are dues fairly priced for the benefits? 68% said, yeah, you know, the dues are just fine for what we get. So I think it's kind of interesting that we had a whole bunch of people that didn't want to be emeritus members because dues were too high. Now we got a bunch of emeritus members that say the dues are just fine. So you sort that out. Dues are too high for the benefits, 11%. There should be no dues for emeritus members, 12%. Yay, we all want that one, right? There should be an alternative dues structure. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Okay, so now about dues. These are some things that people responded with on the survey. And so it might mean that one person wrote this or two or three. It's not, there's no percentages with them. Add a lifetime dues buyout. Now that would mean sometimes if you're an alum of an institution, they'll say, if you give us $500, you can be a lifetime member. So that's what somebody has suggested. And then someone said other societies are free, and we've got a slide to challenge that a little bit. Reduce dues and registration fees based on age. So like if you're like, well, I won't point anybody out, you should be free. Okay. And then there's a lifetime membership option. That's a little bit like a buyout. Discount digital library. That's an interesting one. Change the years of membership requirement. Right now, in order to be an emeritus member, you have to be 25 years or more. So just maybe do away with that. And then the final comment here was drop dues for 50 plus year members and consider due structure based on years of membership. In other words, if you're a 50-year member, maybe free. If you're 40, something else. So that's where the comments went. So now we'll turn to the other category. We sent this questionnaire or survey to people that have been in the societies more than 30 years, and we wanted to know, what do you want when you become an emeritus member? How are you going to behave when you become an emeritus member? And so this is what they said about their plans to attend future annual meetings. So I'm going to put a star up here. The long green bar there is what they currently do. In other words, they attend meetings, about 50%, right? The little dark green bar is what they think they'll do after they become emeritus members. They're not going to come anymore. And you already know what the reason is. It's the same one. It's expensive to travel and stay in the hotels. And then irregularly, you can see the contrast, and also for the never category. So this is what, just to make sure you understand what this is, these are people that are currently active members in the society for 30 or more years, and this is what they're thinking they'll probably do when they become emeritus members, right? That's what we're looking at. Okay. So why aren't they going to come when they become emeritus members? Well, we're right back to the same travel and lodging costs. So you have to convince your spouse that this is a vacation, and then everything will be fine. Okay. So travel and lodging costs, 69%. And then we can go down there, registration fees. And here we're not sure that the current members know the situation. When you register for an annual meeting, we get 50% registration fee compared to other active members. And perhaps the people answering the survey didn't know that when they chose that answer. Personal obligations, 30%. Other, 22%. And then finally, not interested. In other words, I talked to one guy here, I'm not going to tell you who it was, who said, I'm not going to let the office door hit me in the butt when I leave. And he said, I don't plan to be back at these meetings either. And this is a very active member in the society, but it's just a choice, and it's his choice, and that's the way some of us are. Okay, so then these same people, what do they want from the society if they become an emeritus member? Well, they would like reduced annual meeting registration, 80%, and that already exists. Now, maybe they want it reduced even more. That's a possibility. They want an electronic copy of CSA News, 73%. So that publication is very important to people. They want reduced fees for the digital library or journal access, 62%. Now, by the way, that is one thing emeritus members, they don't really get a break on journals or digital library. You pay full board for that. And then the paper copy of CSA News, that was important to 24%, and then other 5%. So what are the long-term member views on dues? Are current emeritus member dues of $50 per society reasonable? Now, the way it works, right now, if you're a member of one society as emeritus, it's $50. Then you can add on an additional society for $25 and another one for another $25. So are the current emeritus member dues of $50 reasonable? And 93% of these people said that's reasonable. So you might ask, and we'll do this in the discussion part here, you know, what do we need to do about dues, if anything? So then if you answer no, will dues be a barrier to your membership? And it's kind of a perhaps NA there, 60%. It's kind of a squishy little number. Then there were other comments, and there were 318 skips here, meaning that this question just wasn't answered on the survey. So that makes you wonder what that might be all about. So now, that's the end of the official presentation, and I got it by in 10 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So now, the next thing that Lee and I are going to do, we have some things for you to chew on, and there's a microphone right there. So if you want to make yourself heard now, this is where you step up. And so we have a slide here or two that some suggestions based on the survey, and these are our interpretations. And we're going to divide this into three parts. We're going to talk about issues related to annual meetings, then we're going to talk about related to CSA News, and then we'll talk about a few things related to dues. And then, of course, if there's something else you want to discuss, we can do that as well. So the first thing, Lee and I, we think this survey shows that the task force doesn't really need to focus on annual meetings, because it appears that the future emeritus members aren't planning to come to these because it's very expensive to come to them. Now, that doesn't mean that some of us won't show up. Right now, our average annual attendance of emeritus members is 40 to 50. And that's the average of, I think, the last 3 years of attendance at the meetings. And so we asked them what their main interest was, and they still like the technical sessions. In other words, not looking for anything special here. And then multiple reasons, travel, registration costs, health, age, and other kinds of things. So we're thinking, and this is something for us to discuss, do we need to focus any more on what we do at annual meetings for emeriti? One more thing here, and then we'll open up the mic. One time, I think last year in this session, we talked about whether or not we need some special social events just for emeriti so we can find out who's here and exchange old stories and make them sound better. Jim Shepherds and I could do that, right? Okay. So a meet and greet type thing. Well, this year, tomorrow morning, Tuesday, 9:30 a.m., there's going to be a gathering place for Emeriti at 9:30 in the exhibit hall. And you can get free coffee, but no cookies. Okay? So we're doing that in kind of response here. And then maybe some other kind of social activity. So now, these are annual meeting related things. So would this be a good time to let's just hear what you think? Maybe you don't think our data indicates what we've indicated here, but we're basically thinking that spending a lot of effort on annual meetings is not really what Emeriti want. So, somebody want to say yes, no? Yeah.
What happened to the CSA discussion?
We'll bring that up later.
Oh,
we're just talking about annual meeting right now. Because, oh yeah, CSA news. We got more slides here to bring that up. Yeah.
Let me add one other thing right now. Tomorrow afternoon at 1:30, the task force is going to have a meeting, and it's going to be in room 6 over in here in the Marriott. The task force is open to anybody that has an interest in how we can meet the needs of the emeritus members. We got about 20 people, I think, on the task force now. But if anybody else has an interest in joining us, either formally through the task force or tomorrow at the meeting, feel free to come to that meeting and contribute additional ideas to this discussion. So,
when you're saying don't concentrate on the annual meeting, do you mean beyond what we're now doing?
Yes. Beyond what we're now doing. In other words, a lot of the comments were if they came, that we're still interested in technical sessions, and so it appears that we're already doing enough. That's the way we would interpret it.
We didn't go to the microphone.
If you can make us hear, that's okay.
Make it work. Okay, so I'm in an unusual situation this year. I live in the Tampa area, and I wrote the society a couple times and said, hey, I'm here, what can I do that can help? So a month before, maybe 6 weeks before the meeting, they said, if you come and work for us, we'll pay your registration fee. I would have done it either way, but I said, sure, I'll do that. However, I've got a lot of hours that I have to put in for that. But I went yesterday and did the, I was the judge for the two out of three. They had me up for three, and then they didn't ask me to do a culture session. But on the first set, they only had three judges for two rooms. Okay, so the various professors could have tremendously helped, and I tell you what, I never did that before, and I enjoyed both stuff.
Okay.
I also worked at the registration desk this morning for hours, and it was a lot of fun, and actually I interacted with people coming in, and they really enjoyed it. And the staff said, hey, we got to get more emeritus professors to come and be at the there because they know me. And if they've got a young person coming from Korea or something, and they can engage them, and it was really quite enjoyable. And then I'm going to spend 2 3-hour sessions at the fundraising booth, and I don't know how that's going to go. I'll find out. But what I'm saying is, it's not necessarily for the free registration, but that where are the opportunities for emeritus professors to engage here? I think it has opened up very easily. And there certainly is a need from everything I've seen so far this week. But just a comment.
Okay. So let me ask you, friend, you volunteered to do this, or they asked you because you lived in the area?
I wrote them multiple. I actually wrote them a year ago.
Okay.
And it was an email glitch. They actually asked me, I found out a year later that they had asked me to go get Derek Jeter to do the speech Wednesday night, and I never got the email because it was embedded in something. And they never contacted me again. But I made offers all the way along that I'd help out because I lived there.
Okay.
And so I engaged them first. And they were kind of like, well, how come we haven't done this before? Okay. That was the reaction I got from the staff. Was the reaction I got from the students. And I was at the pop with the presidents today, and they enjoyed it as well. So my experience with doing this, the first time I've ever done it, was we could be much more heavily engaged in the meetings themselves, just by saying, hey, where can we tap into those folks? They know a lot of people, they have former members, and like I said, when we reach out to former students, because we have them, we can talk about that in your country, how you're doing, and it's just a different engagement than the staff, who are very good, but they've been sitting there for 2 days or 3 days. So I think there's an opportunity, and much less doing, being moderators at sessions, we're not even asked to do that anymore. So I think there's some opportunity.
Okay, good one. Yeah.
Your comments are sort of thought. We don't really do a very good job of outreach to the general public in the communities in which we hold our annual meetings. There's no forum that the public is invited to come as our guests. We often have had things where we've done things with teachers at the society meeting. But is there something that we could do in a totally different way that would be agronomy comes to the city or something of that nature that where we plan a program that maybe you have a team elder, but then there be the opportunities for society members and Maritime members to sit around tables and talk about issues of crop soils, environment, natural resource management. I don't know how much we would get in the way of taters, but we've not tried anything like that. And this might be the group that could sort of lead that kind of effort.
It sounds like that goes beyond emeritus members.
Oh, yeah, I would see it going beyond, but have a core of emeritus members to sort of spearhead it.
Okay. You getting all this?
Yep.
Yeah, Cal.
Yeah, follow up on that. Urban agriculture is getting quite a lot of attention now in many cities, I think. Wherever we go, we could have created urban agriculture forum or something and open it to the public. Maybe you get some of the local folks interested in that. It'd be a service we could provide some of the old folks and some of the younger guys. Like that. So I think that's a great opportunity.
The Ecological Society has frequently issued invitations to the public or to public organizations for their keynote address and the opening night. And you don't get thousands of people, but a few dozen from the local community and some publicity as well that this is going on.
I think I might have one more slide here about annual meeting related. Let's just put that up here. We'll stay on annual meetings here for a little bit. We could consider zero registration for emeritus members, and that would cost the societies between $9,000 and $11,000 based on the current 40 to 50 people that come. And of course, the boards of the societies would have to approve that kind of thing. That's a possibility. And then there was some thoughts in the comments about recognizing 50-year plus members, and I think that's being done this year. When I showed up here, this little white 50-plus member thing was attached to the thing. Any more comments about the meetings? Yeah.
Yeah, well, I missed something. There, some of us are not professors with nice and some of us have been trained in the agronomists who don't know anything about business or keeping their own money or making their own money. And to some, one of the people that replied to the questionnaire, the expense of coming to me is kind of expensive.
Definitely.
But I will come to any of these. I come to all these meetings while I'm alive and have to take food off the kids' table. No, I'm just kidding. But I'm just saying, there are some that this is a little, that is a hurdle.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
One more thing. By being a member in the Golden Scholar Opportunity Fund, I am invited to participate in the VIP session as in the opening evening of the agronomy meeting. And make, and there's actually more than a few of the older members that are included in that group as participants. And that might be, you know, if someone has the expense of coming to the meeting and they're emeritus and they are retired and traveling in Route 9, this might be an appropriate way to have them, because many of them have had long careers where maybe some of the younger members have not had the opportunity to meet them previously. So this might be a good way to foster that generational gap with the younger professionals.
Okay, so repeat that for me. That's like with the Golden Scholar?
The reason I have been at that particular VIP thing, because I'm not specifically a VIP, is because I've been mentoring in the Golden Opportunity Scholar Fund. But what I would say is that if, you know, someone of this generation of years of membership is here, I think maybe an automatic invitation to the VIP luncheon could be in order.
Could be a perk.
Okay.
It's actually an appropriate perk, okay. Is what I'm saying. Because, and like I say, that could provide a very good contact point for people, especially on the younger generation coming in, to say, these are some of the people who are working.
Okay.
Maybe it's that group that's the 50-year-plus or 40-year-plus, if you want to make it a little lower, that have recognition from the rough of that.
Right. And that could be, there's some place where you could have an appropriate recognition with the standing recognition of 50-year members, and that could be the appropriate time, or maybe whenever.
I think a lot of this group were already there.
I don't know how many, more than a few were.
Okay. You're talking about the ASF reception.
Yes, yeah. That's correct.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, Fran.
I've been coming for a long time, and I interact with our sponsors and our folks that come and sell their goods downstairs. And I bet you no one's ever asked, would you guys support travel or registration fees for America's professors? Because probably everybody in this room has had some professional relationship with somebody in that room. I'm going to guarantee that. Nobody's ever asked that question. Say, could you put a pool of money together? Don't make it just open. Just say, we have a pool of funds. Please just ask us, and we won't ask any questions. And I bet you $9,000 to $11,000 is absolutely nothing for some of these companies.
So in other words, you're saying if we were to offer free registration, that we could get some.
Now, I wouldn't call it free, because you know people will pay when they have the opportunity. When they don't, they're afraid. Yes, they won't come.
Oh, okay.
I'm saying that if you have a pool of money, you don't ever ask anybody who asks and say, look, I can't afford it, but if you could pay my registration fee, I would come. No questions asked. And I think that would take over and be picked up by the people down in that room without hesitation. No one's probably ever asked.
Okay. Interesting idea. Okay. So are we ready to go past the meetings and go to the next thing? We can always come back. So now, these are suggestions that we think that survey came up with here regarding CSA News. Let me put them all up here. Obviously, the CSA News is a key communication with the emeritus members. They wanted it electronically or paper. They wanted that. So most preferred email, and especially the international emeriti, and then enhance the CSA News with articles about retirees. Now, the task force has talked about this a little bit. Sometimes we don't know when somebody's going to retire, and it would be kind of nice to know that Jim Shepard's retired, and just note, and then I would know. Huh? You did retire once.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I know. But in other words, right now, unless you're friends with somebody, you don't know about upcoming retirements or anything. So there's been some discussion about how to get that kind of information into something. You know, right now you get an obituary in there, you know, the permanent retirement, but not the other. So developing a mechanism to obtain information on who is retiring. And this is where we run into, you know, how do you do this? So we need to process capture data from academic, public, private And anyway, you can read those as well as I can. We just really don't know how to do this, but we think, Lee and I think, that the survey indicated that people would like to have this kind of information. So what we need is some ideas about how we're going to get the info. What do you think? Would you like to have this? Would you like to have information about retirements, not just obituaries?
Yeah.
Yeah. So how are we going to get it? Because unless the individual member sends it in, you generally don't find out, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I would suggest there's a strong correlation between getting on your merit status and being retired. Because once you retire, then you really look a little bit more carefully at your budget.
Right.
You can say that the registration fee and having your annual dues, but being a merit member, just have a list of new merit members
Okay, so have a list of the new emeritus members in CSA News. Okay? Yeah?
In the same way that we can edit our information on the ASA website now,
uh-huh.
You easily have a page in the website on your individual page for retirement information.
Yeah, and then we could monitor that, couldn't we?
Yes.
Yep. Yes?
You're right. Have a box where you renew your membership by retirement.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, right now we do that. You know, we check off emeriti and then we pay less money. But then that never connects with the CSA News. And that, so there's the little step, isn't it? Yes, Cal.
The Society does that in their weekly and monthly newsletter. And I think that department heads and managers provide that information or are asked to give information when people have retired or are planning to or doing something special and put a note in.
Okay. Anybody else want to jump in here? Yes.
So how do you gather the PhD, MS information that gets published, once a year?
Yeah, that one is fairly easy because that all comes from universities. So there's a email that goes to the department head or chair and says, please report this. And so it gets reported. Now, with retiring people, we could do that with universities. And with ARS or NRCS, it might be a little more difficult. And then in the private industry, it's even harder to figure out how to go there. So I know where you're going here, but it seems like it's a little bit different population. Yes?
Well, if you're already checking off the emeritus member status at some point, mm-hmm. Would it be easy enough to have a second box that says, yes, I'd like to continue receiving CSA News? And anybody who checks the box, you fill in your email address.
Yeah, and that does happen if you pay the emeritus membership. But in other words, let's say you decide to retire, but you don't want to be an emeritus member anymore, then all of a sudden the CSA News stops coming to you.
I guess then you, what you would want to do is have it as an optional box, don't link it to emeritus.
Yeah.
Because presumably, if once it's there, if you're still paying dues, you'll see it. And then when you decide to retire, you say, wow, I better check that box.
Mm-hmm. So there's another thing that crossed my mind, and this isn't anything that Lee has to take any blame for. It would seem to me that since electronic is basically free, that when a person quits being a member, there isn't any electronic reason why they couldn't continue to get CSA News, even if they don't re-up. In other words, we could kind of keep them on the hook free of charge. Now, in order to get that done, we'd have to get the society executive committees to approve, but it...
Essentially, you're saying it's an opt-out rather than an opt-in.
Yeah.
You're going to continue getting...
Yeah, whether you pay or not, you would continue to get CSA News. And I frankly can't see anything wrong with that. If... what's that?
I
how do you get people off of this? I mean,
Well, when they die, you know, and their email cancels, then you dump them.
At the bottom of every email, it's like, if you want to opt out, click here or unsubscribe. Every email subscription, I'm all of this that way. Every time at the bottom, click here if you want to unsubscribe. You opt out.
Well, so the paper copy is another thing. You know, you have to print the paper copy, you have to mail it, and so if you're not paying dues, you probably aren't going to get that. But I can't see anything.
If the only thing they want is CSA News, and they're going to get it for free, they won't sign up as Emeritus members and pay that.
Well, I don't know. I'm going to be an Emeritus member for a long time, even if I can't come to these meetings. So I think there's more to it than that. I think maybe you might get a lot of people to go ahead and pay you if you keep getting CSA News. That's just an opinion, of course. Yeah.
Why couldn't you try to work something through LinkedIn? I don't know how many people in this room are on something like some social, business social network, but I'm on LinkedIn. I hear from other people just because I'm associated with. I don't know if we can do that in the society, but we can certainly do it through one of the social medias that just say, I want to be part of the Emeritus LinkedIn network, and so I hear about people when they're here, when they're there. I mean, I don't do a lot of LinkedIn, but I do hear from other people when they have an anniversary today or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I think it's already out there. It's just a matter of trying to connect us through something like that that's already in existence. In no sense creating it.
Okay.
You can create a group on LinkedIn. Someone could create a group of CSA Emeritus and CSA Emeriti, and people need to be aware of it. They need to go look for it to sign up for it. But you have a self-identified group.
Okay. So really the suggestion is that find a way to use social media to answer part of these questions.
I mean, some people don't like it.
Yeah.
So you have to have another option.
Right.
But awesome.
Yeah.
To me, there's all a big difference between Facebook and LinkedIn.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
And I would really like to be a part of LinkedIn, but I don't want to be a part of Facebook.
Right. That's the
problem. All you need is someone to form a group.
Yep.
I've formed groups on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm. LinkedIn's pretty easy. I don't know if people learn it, but it's very easy. You can ignore it if you want. Yeah. Facebook is a little lame. Yeah. LinkedIn is just business. Just, you want to say hi to somebody, you want to do it or not, you don't want to.
And if you keep getting postings from some people, you can actually shut those off too. Yeah. I did that last week. I think let's go one more step here. Let's talk about the dues thing a little bit. So one of the, you know, dues, 68% of the potential new emeriti said that dues looked reasonable to them, or well, no, it was 90%. Anyway, so we thought though that it might be worth talking about this a little bit and maybe make a recommendation from our task force to the leadership, considering some changes in due structure based on years of membership. So for example, 50-year plus member, maybe zero with electronic CSA News. You can see all the options there. If you're less than a 50-year member, just dues 50% of active. So for the discussion here, do you think that we need to suggest anything about dues restructuring for emeritus members? That's the question that we really have in front of us.
I have one question. Used to be dues included a subscription to one of the journals.
Yep.
Now they've taken that completely away. They've raised the dues because they need to cover up on big meetings and other things. And you cannot even get one of your own publications in the society anymore. One of the things they could do is they want to limit, because I've had this discussion with them, they don't want this thing to blow up on them. But I think you could get something like, you get 50 free requests for publications. When you use them up, then you're a big user and go pay the digital fee. But the fact that you can't even get your own publications, it's kind of ridiculous.
Okay, so unless you're a member of Digital Library, you can't
get your own publications, which is kind of like an insult.
You can get them through Google Scholar, though.
Oh, I can. I can find that author and I go send them an email and just let me read it. But the point of the matter is just give you something.
Okay. So I think we have something else here that we'll just show you. Lee went to a lot of work to gather this information, and this is what the dues structure is for emeritus members in other societies. And so regular membership, $100, emeritus 50, that's the tri-societies. And then if you want to be additional, like two societies or three, you can see the cost there. And then we go down to the Hort Society, Phytopath, INT, and so forth down here, and you can see the comparison. So the only one that, I guess there are two of them that have zero emeritus membership. One of them is American Pathological Society. The other one is the Ecological Society of America. And I'm not sure why they have that or anything, but this is what the data show. So it looks to me like we compare fairly well with most of the societies.
Yeah. Well, you might look at the American Chemical Society. If you're a long-term member, you're really tithing on top. Shortly after you retire, you don't pay any dues. It's a zero. Mm. And so you shouldn't discount that. So is the Geological Society.
Okay.
So those are four major societies that have zero, essentially by the time you come in here.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah. So if you've been a member of the society long enough, yeah, you basically become zero. Yeah. So in our case, then, 50-year members would certainly be out there. Yeah.
And that less than 50 years.
Yeah, it's less than 50 years. Yeah, by a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
So do you believe that the task force should discuss this more? And by the way, any of you can be members of the task force, as Lee has explained, and bring issues about this to the leadership of the societies. What do you think?
Well, I think if you look at that chart there, the two largest societies by quite a margin are American Chemical Society and the Geological Society. And, you know, free after 70 years, or 35 years of membership, and you know, with much larger membership base, it seems to me to be a reasonable move. And look at, you know, how do you build a bigger emeritus group? And I think it becomes an important part of keeping them, our members, vested in the society, and quite frankly, you know, a number of us have been on the ASF board. This is a group that is more likely to contribute to the future of the organization, and the best way to do that is through ASF. And you know, how do we, you know, nurture and foster those kind of relationships. So I think that looking at you know, zero cost for the emeriti after 35 years of membership, or if it shows that it's a financial burden, 40 years, but certainly by age 70.
Right.
Just using your own data, you said 68% emeritus said they would give the money to the society because they want to support the society. So my suggestion is this: open up emeritus free, let everybody stay connected, be a member, and then right after it say, we know, we appreciate your support, what level would you be willing to give to support the society? And I, my question would be is, if you did that one time, would you have more money and more members after that than you did before? And my bet would be you probably have more. Because people may even up their number because they're trying to support the society. If you gave them a range like 25, even 10, 50, 100 or more, they may pay more than that. Right? So in the end, you might be higher. And you've built a relationship that everybody stays connected.
So I know he did it for financial reasons, because I was in the society board when that happened, mm-hmm. and I was disturbed by it a little bit, because I felt like, why cut everybody off? There's reasons they don't pay, they don't come. But your numbers say 68% will contribute anyway, basically, mm-hmm. and maybe you didn't ask for enough, mm-hmm. and that would take care of the problem.
So would you also consider ASF as part of that payment, Fran, or to the society?
I think you could play it any way you want to. I think it's very important that you're personal in your request, that you don't become a number and just check a box and whatever. You want to say, look, we know you want to support this. You're an Emeritus member. We want to give you the privilege of being part of our society at no cost. However, if you are able, please do this, and maybe even target it. Maybe target and say, I would prefer to give $100 to the foundation than I would to the society. Let them go where they want to go. But I think a more pleasant thing like that would be much better for the society. Also tells you, when you go down the Capitol Hill and you say, I've got 4,000 members, or I've got 10,000 members, half of which have been around for a while.
Okay.
Just a different ballgame. It may in fact be semantics, but one has a much better appeal than the other.
Let's just add to that a little bit. You know, we could also propose that Emeritus members get a reduction in use of the digital library. In other words, right now, if you're an Emeritus member and you get the reduced fee, you still pay full bore for digital library. So would you think it'd be reasonable to ask for some discount on digital library, or don't you really care about that? A friend cares. I know that. Yeah.
I do have a question. In our definition of emeritus, you could be an emeritus with 25 years of membership.
But you can't. You have to be retired.
Okay, because that was not clear at one point in time. I know this question came up a couple of years ago, and it was not quite clear. So if you're actively working and have 25 years, you're not qualified to be emeritus.
Correct.
As soon as you are retired, you can't. Because, like I say, a year or so ago, that was not quite clear on exactly how that was defined. But I would suggest the possibility that, as we're discussing here, that if you left the emeritus at $50, possibly, say, just funnel that all into ASF.
Okay.
Just one other way to raise money would be, is if you have an appeal during the year and you, as an emeritus, contribute, that could also weigh your, or increase your digital library assets or whatever. So you'll get something for contributing to other causes during the year.
Now,
it's not hard to track it. You can talk to Ian. He can track that stuff. He can track everything I ever did at Google. You can go do that.
Well, I know that, yeah. You just have to do it.
Yeah.
So, do we know how many of the Emeriti members take the digital library? We know that?
I don't know. Yeah. We haven't asked that question.
Mm-hmm. So, how many people in here are Emeritus members and do take the digital library? One, two, me, that's three. Okay.
How many would if it was reasonable?
Oh.
Yeah, no, that's not what I'm asking.
That's the issue right there.
No, I'm talking about what's happening right now. So very few right now, probably. I don't know if you're a good sample or not, but maybe.
Well, of course, that's a benefit that's essentially free to the organization.
Yeah. It's free to do. What you would lose is the people that are doing it now. In other words, however many that might be.
But apparently that's not very many.
Well, we can find that out, too. No, Susan can find that out right away. So now, those are all the suggestions that Lee and I have based on the date of the survey, and we've kind of directed the discussion based on those last slides. So now, what other kinds of things would you like to have the task force consider? Yeah.
Put somebody in the Emeritus group, you said there was 1,300. Why aren't they on the board? Why aren't they have a seat somewhere, even if they're non-voting?
No, there's only 400.
We showed the survey results were 1,300.
No, there's 430 Emeritus members across all three societies.
Is that because we lost them? Or is that how many?
That's how many we have now, and it's been that way for the last...
How many there are?
It's been fairly stable for the last 5 years.
If you're trying to retain people as maritime, it would also make sense in the news to say how many new maritime have been acquired within the X amount of time, this year, whatever it may be, just as a point of information to people, because that's the old... Not so much peer picture pressure, but peer recognition type of thing. Even if you don't name the names, but as was said earlier, you could. You would say, how many you gained and what is that? It's a pros. One of what people would like me to retain or join, especially with some of the suggestions that we made.
Okay. Anything else?
I think the access to the journals is an issue for quite a few people. And the cost is fairly high to sign in, but it's one of the things I think showed up in the surveys that people like to get access to the journals and like to see the journals, and like to say they're really not available to you unless you've got a linkage to your from your organization or library.
Yeah, and if you're at a university, if your library is in, then you've got it made either way. You don't really need it. But if you're not at the university, you can't do that. So, Leo.
I think you ought to explore the possibility of getting ESF involved a little more.
Yeah.
I have experienced with one organization where there's a percentage of the gift, the tax-free gift, that goes to a part of that organization's activities that wouldn't qualify. And then there's a much larger part that does qualify. And so I think if you added some opportunity for ASF to have a portion of that that could be argued to be a charitable gift, that would be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you want to give something, but you really don't want to give that much. And if the smaller gift somehow got the attention of people that were only interested in, say, $100 a year, and if 80% of it goes to activities through ASF, that's tax-free, that's going to attract some people.
Yeah. Okay.
That's good.
Somebody else had a hand. Yes.
Yeah, very good. I think one section that we have not reached out to that we may need to consider, and that is because all of our focus thus far is towards the university topic. And I think one group that we've missed out on as a society is the large number of soil scientists who have retired from NRCS. Mm-hmm. Huge number of them. If we reach out to them, I think we can see the numbers go up.
Okay.
You know, because we're too focused right now, strictly on the academic side.
Mm-hmm.
But you have these soil scientists who have worked for 30 years or more with NRCS,
mm-hmm.
that used to be members of the society, but yet we don't count them as potentially maritime.
Okay. So you're saying people that have they been members of our society, and they were not reaching to them?
Right, because they retired, you know, and because of the fee structure or whatever, they sort of drop out.
Okay.
But I think if we can reach out to them, it would boost our membership.
Okay. Yeah, and it's easier now to reach out to those that will become emeriti. Once you've cut the ties with people, that's why only 14 people that were previous emeriti, you know, that they didn't bother to respond to the survey. You know, they're basically gone. So we got to start with a fresh batch. Anything else? Yeah, Jim.
This is perhaps gray area, perhaps informational, but we don't know what the tax laws are going to do. But it might be helpful if people had a little advice or this expense for travel expenses, hotels, all this sort of thing, might be deductible if you have a little bit of income, or how much can you claim tax-wise? What's the real reason? Sure, it costs a lot of money when you pay a hotel bill and this sort of thing. You're right, the airline takes a check, but maybe a lot of that is tax deductible.
If you're a consultant, that's pretty. If you're a consultant and you have consulting income, that is pretty straightforward.
That's why I think greater.
Well, I'll tell you what. We'll just get you to take care of all that for us.
You only have to make money 1 out of 3 years or something.
Anything else? Well, thanks for your time.